Now, white titles appear against a black background. A John Hughes production. A Chris Columbus film. Appearing out of a black sky, a dark, drifting cloud unveils a spooky blue moon. Titles continue. Macaulay Culkin as Kevin. Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern, John Hurd, Roberts Blossom, and Catherine O'Hara. Angela Gothels, Devin Rattray, Jerry Bamman, Hilary Wolf, Larry Hankin. Below, a cartoon-like graphic appears. A simple blue house with one dark window rests on a flat line. In capital letters, two words, home and alone, slide in and touch the house. A light goes on in the window. The E in alone is lowercase and tipped crookedly to one side. The house withdraws, floating backward into the blackness. The words disappear, leaving only the house with its one window glowing. More titles. Music by John Williams. Now, Christmas lights glow around the windows and in the front bushes of a large suburban house.
Where's my suitcase?
Inside, several children and adults bustle about. A policeman stands in the front hall.
Miss, young lady, excuse me, girls. Hey,
Girls,
take the
witches. Hey, Tracy, come on down here.
Ma'am,
hi, son.
The policeman grimaces.
Big fella, hey, little guy.
Everyone ignores him. Now upstairs.
His brother and his family are here. Oh, it's crazy.
You know, Tracy's going to Montreal.
Montreal?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's right, her family's there.
And then we're off.
When do you leave? You're not ready, are you?
Mom, Uncle Frank won't let me watch the movie, but the big kids can. Why can't I?
Kevin, I'm on the phone. When do you come back? Not till then.
It's not even rated R. He's just being a jerk.
Kevin, if Uncle Frank says no, then it must be really bad.
Kevin hops onto his mother's bed.
Hey, get off. Kevin, out of the room.
Hang up the phone and make me, why don't you?
Hey, did you by any chance pick up the voltage adapter thing?
No, I didn't have time to do that.
Well, how am I supposed to shave in France?
Grow a goatee.
Dad, nobody let me do anything.
Bye.
You don't have anything to do? I got something for you to do. You can pick up those micro machines that are all over in there. Aunt Leslie stepped on one and almost broke her neck.
He was in the garage again playing with the glue gun.
Didn't we talk about that?
Did I burn down the joint? I don't think so. I was making ornaments out of fish hooks.
My new fish hooks?
I can make ornaments out of the old ones with dry worm guts stuck on them.
Peter.
Come on, Kevin. Out.
Peter, Kate, do you guys have a voltage adapter?
Here's a voltage adapter.
Kevin, you're getting heavy. Go pack your suitcase.
Kevin's blue eyes widen.
Pack my suitcase?
Downstairs.
Do you know where the shampoo is, Fuller?
I don't live here.
I don't believe in a house with this many people, there's no shampoo.
Pardon me, are you a parent's home?
Yeah, but they don't live here. Tracy, did you order the pizza?
Oz did.
Excuse me, miss. Are your parents here?
My parents live in Paris, sorry.
Hi.
Hi.
Are your parents home?
Yeah.
Do they live here?
No.
No. Why should they? All kids, no parents. Probably a fancy orphanage.
I don't know how to pack a suitcase. I've never done this once in my whole life.
Tough.
That's what Megan said.
What did I say? You told Kevin tough. The dope was whining about a suitcase. What am I supposed to do? Shake his hand and say congratulations, you're an idiot?
I'm not an idiot.
Oh, really? You're completely helpless. Everyone has to do everything for you.
She's right, Kev.
Excuse me, pupils. I'm a lot smaller than you. I don't know how to pack a suitcase.
Hey, I hope you didn't just pack crap, Jeff.
Shut up, Lenny.
Do you know what I should pack?
Buzz told you, cheek face. Toilet paper and water.
Lenny smirks.
Listen, Kev, what are you so worried about? You know Mom's gonna pack your stuff anyway. You're what the French call les incompetents.
What?
Jeff heaves his bag.
Bombs away!
It lands downstairs at the policeman's feet. Back upstairs.
P.S. You have to sleep on the hide-a-bed with Fuller. If he has something to drink, he's gonna wet the bed.
Lenny turns and leaves.
This house is so full of people. It makes me sick. When I grow up and get married, I'm living alone. Did you hear me? I'm living alone!
Now, an older boy taps a glass tarantula terrarium.
Who's gonna feed your spider while we're gone?
He just ate a whole load of mice guts. He should be good for a couple weeks.
A beefy kid with a crew cut.
Is it true that French babes don't shave their pits?
Some don't.
But they got nude beaches.
Not in the winter.
The beefy kid frowns, then fiddles with a Walkman. Half his size, Kevin wanders in.
Buzz?
Don't you know how to knock phlegm wad?
Can I sleep in your room? I don't want to sleep on the hide bed with Fuller. If he has something to drink, he'll wet the bed.
I wouldn't let you sleep in my room if you were growing on my ass.
Buzz glances at the window.
Check it out, old man Marley.
Next door, an old man holding a shovel drags a trash can down his front walk.
Who's he?
You ever heard of South Bend Shovel Slam?
No.
That's him. Back in 58, murdered his whole family and half the people on his block. With the snow shovel. Been hiding out in this neighborhood ever since.
Well, if he's a shovel slayer, how come the cops don't arrest him?
Not enough evidence to convict. They never found the bodies. But everyone around here knows he did it. Now, it'll just be a matter of time before he does it again.
What's he doing now?
He walks up and down the streets every night, salting the sidewalks.
Maybe he's just trying to be nice.
No way. See the garbage can full of salt? That's where he keeps his victims. The salt turns the bodies into mummies.
Kevin's eyebrows leap up. The bearded old man glances up at the boys.
Yeah. Look out!
They yank the curtain shut. Old man Marley frowns and continues salting the path. Now a delivery car fishtails around a corner, careens down the suburban street, and skids into the driveway of Kevin's house. Just before the front door, the driver slams on the brakes and knocks over a statue of a horse jockey. A skinny delivery boy rushes over to the painted statue and stands it right side up in the snow. Inside, Fuller and Brooke stare blankly at the policeman, their mouths agape.
How are you kids doing, huh? Good? A lot of action around here today, huh? Going on vacation? Where you going? You hear me or what? Going on a trip? Where you going, kid?
The kids stare vacantly. The policeman opens the front door. The pizza boy walks in, carrying a stack of 10 pizzas.
Okay, that's $122.50.
Not for me, kid. I don't live here.
Oh, you just around for the holidays?
I guess you could say that.
Hey, pizza's here!
There you go. That's $122.50.
Oh, it's my brother's house. He'll take care of it.
A balding man takes the food.
Hey, listen,
Kevin's dad.
Hi.
Hi. Are you Mr. McAllister?
Yeah.
The Mr. McAllister who lives here?
Yes.
Oh, good, because somebody owes me $122.50.
I'd like a word with you, sir.
Am I under arrest or something?
No. It's Christmas time. There's always a lot of burglaries around the holidays. So we're just checking the neighborhood to see if everyone's taking the proper precautions, that's all.
Oh, yeah, well, we have automatic timers for our lights, locks for our doors. That's about as well as anybody can do these days, right? Did you get some eggnog or something like that?
Come on, Dad.
Let's see. Eggnog?
Pizza!
Listen,
pizza!
Will you be leaving?
Pizza!
Kevin charges into the crowded kitchen.
Grab yourself a napkin and you're going to have to pour your own drinks.
Mom, does Santa Claus have to go through customs? What time do you have to go to bed?
Early. We're leaving the house at 8 a.m. on the bus.
I hope you're all drinking milk. I want to get rid of it.
Hey, don't you?
All right, the pizza boy needs $122.50 plus tip.
For pizza?
10 pizzas times 12 bucks.
Frank, you've got some money, don't you? Come on.
Traveler's checks.
Forget it, Frank. We have cash.
Staring at Kevin, Buzz crams a piece of pizza into his mouth.
Did anyone order me plain cheese?
Well, yeah, we did. But if you want any, somebody's going to have to barf it all up because it's gone.
Fuller, go easy on the Pepsi.
Fuller grins devilishly at Kevin. Kevin's mouth tightens into an angry line. Buzz smirks.
Get a plate.
Buzz pretends to throw up. Kevin slams into him. Buzz hits the counter and spills 3 cups of milk. Kevin's dad jumps up. He knocks over a full bottle of Pepsi. Uncle Frank backs up his seat and pins Fuller's head against the wall. Cleaning up, Kevin's dad accidentally throws a milk-soaked airline ticket into the trash. Aunt Leslie rescues Fuller. Kevin's mom grabs Kevin.
What is the matter with you? He started it. He ate my pizza on purpose. He knows I ate sausage and olives and
onions. Look what you did, you little jerk.
Wiping off his soaking wet pants, Frank glares at him. Everyone in the room stares coldly at Kevin as he glances from person to person. His dad sends him a scolding frown. Arms crossed, Buzz narrows his eyes.
Kevin, get upstairs right now.
Why?
Kevin, you're such a disease.
Shut up.
Kevin, upstairs.
Say goodnight, Kevin.
Goodnight, Kevin.
Kevin's mom leads him into the front hall.
Why do I always get treated like skunk?
Oh, I'm sorry. This house is just crazy. We've got all these extra kids running around. My brother-in-law drove in from Ohio today. It's just nuts.
How come you didn't bring more cheese pizzas?
The pizza boy shrugs.
Nice tip. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Having a reunion or something?
Oh, no, my husband's brother transferred to Paris last summer. And
the policeman flashes a gleaming gold tooth as he winks at Kevin.
Giving us all this trip to Paris for the holiday so we can be together.
You're taking a trip to Paris?
Yes, we hope to leave tomorrow morning.
Excellent, excellent.
If you'll excuse me, this one's a little out of sorts. I'll be right back.
Don't worry about me. I spoke to your husband already. And don't worry about your home. It's in good hands.
The gold-tooth policeman grins, then leaves.
There are 15 people in this house. You're the only one who has to make trouble.
I'm the only one getting dumped on.
You're the only one acting up. Now, get upstairs.
I am upstairs, dummy.
She opens a door.
Third floor?
Go.
It's scary up there.
Don't be silly. Fuller will be up in a little while.
I don't want a super Fuller. You know about him. He wets the bed. He'll pee all over me. I know it.
Fine. We'll put him somewhere else.
I'm sorry.
It's too late. Get upstairs.
Kevin stomps up a few steps and turns around.
Everyone in this family hates me.
Then maybe you should ask Santa for a new family.
I don't want a new family. I don't want any family. Families suck.
Just stay up there. I don't want to see you again for the rest of the night.
I don't want to see you again for the rest of my whole life. And I don't want to see anybody else either.
I hope you don't mean that. You'd feel pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you didn't have a family.
No, I wouldn't.
Then say it again. Maybe it'll happen.
I hope I never see any jerks again.
Kevin marches upstairs. His mom rolls her eyes and shuts the door. In the well-lit attic playroom, Kevin trudges over to an open sofa bed and lies on his back. Hands behind his head, he stares thoughtfully at the sloped ceiling and pouts.
I wish they would all just disappear.
Nighttime. In the dark sky, shadowy clouds drift past a glowing full moon. Only a few lights remain on in the windows of Kevin's house. A plastic Santa rolls down the windy street like loose tumbleweed. A fierce wind rips a red ribbon off a lamppost. At Kevin's house, leaves whirl through the air. The hanging entrance light swings around. A wreath flaps on the front door. A Santa face in its center stares at us. A tree branch splits and falls onto some power lines. The telephone pole's fuse box explodes and sparks shower the street. All the lights in Kevin's house go out. Now, the next morning. An airport driver stands at the front door. Two vans are parked in the driveway. Another driver picks up the fallen statue. Across the street, a repairman works on the downed lines.
I don't know. She said 8 sharp.
In bed, Kevin's mother groggily taps her alarm clock, which flashes 12 o'clock. Then she picks up her watch.
Peter!
They tumble out of bed.
We slept in!
In a fast-motion flurry of activity, kids and adults speed up and down the stairs, in and out of the kitchen, most of the kids still in their pajamas. Outside, a boy from across the street ambles up the driveway and approaches one of the airport drivers.
I live across the street. You guys going out of town? We're going to Orlando, Florida.
Well, actually, first we're going into Missouri to pick up my grandma. Do you know the McAllisters are going to France? Do you know if it's cold there? Do these vans get good gas mileage?
Gee, kid, I don't know. Hit the road.
Inside.
Heather, do a head count. Make sure everyone's in the vans. Where are the passports and tickets?
Put them in the microwave and dry them off.
How fast does this thing go? Does it have automatic transmission? Does it have four-wheel drive?
Look, I told you before, kid, don't bother me. Now beat it.
Now, all of the kids, except Kevin, march outside. The pretty teenaged Heather is the last to leave the house. Mitch, the neighbor boy, still stands inside the van, rummaging through some luggage.
Line up in front of the van!
The kids line up. Mitch finds a camera in one of the bags.
Shut up! I gotta take a head count. 1, 2, 11, 92, 12. Fuzz, don't be a moron.
Heather counts Mitch without seeing his face.
8, 9, 10, 11. Okay. Half in this van, half in this van. Let's go.
Mitch climbs out and waves.
Have a good trip. Bring me back something fresh.
Now the parents rush outside.
There's no way on earth we're going to make this plane. It leaves in 45 minutes.
Think positive, Frank.
You be positive. I'll be realistic.
Ma'am, excuse me. I just wanted to let you know that your power is fixed, but the phone lines are a mess. It's going to take Ma Bell a couple of days to patch them up, especially around the holidays.
Okay, thanks. Heather, did you count heads?
11, including me. 5 boys, 6 girls, 4 parents, 2 drivers, and a partridge in a pear tree.
The 2 packed airport vans roll out of the driveway.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind.
Now, at the airport, leading the pack, Kate and Peter race down a crowded passageway. The kids jog behind them. Kate's bleary eyes widen anxiously. Frank shuffles along, carrying Fuller. They snake through the crowd, elbowing and bumping people out of their way. Peter thrusts out their tickets as they approach the gate.
Hold the play.
Did we miss the flight?
No, you just made it.
Yeah!
Single seats only, coach. Take whatever's free.
Everyone hurries down the gateway toward the plane. Now, the parents in the first class cabin.
You get ready, coach. We're in
town. You see, you have 4 A&B. 4 A&B. I'll take the coats.
Thank you.
Fasten your seatbelts, please.
Champagne, please.
Yes.
It's free, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
We made it.
Can you believe it? Hope we didn't forget anything.
Back at Kevin's house, the attic door opens slowly. Wearing flannel pajamas, Kevin peeks into the hallway, his blonde hair sticking out like a stiff mop. Blinking sleepily, he glances around and walks out. The American Jet airliner lifts off of the runway. Back at home, Kevin leaves the upstairs bathroom and pads across the hall. Eyes half closed, he shuffles downstairs. He wanders into the kitchen. All of the dinner chairs are neatly in place. The tile countertop is sparkling clean. He paces past the counter and stovetop island and turns on a small television. Miracle on 34th Street is on. Kevin climbs onto a wooden stool and sits on his knees. Leaning over the counter, he twiddles his thumbs and glances at the TV. His gaze strays from the TV and drifts through the kitchen, past the clean, empty sink, the back door with its dog entrance flap, the shiny tiles on the countertop, a gingerbread house, and finally, back to the TV set. Frowning curiously, he gets off of the stool and turns off the TV.
Mom?
The airplane soars above the clouds. On board, a stewardess serves lunch. Frank taps a pepper shaker with his knife.
Yes, please. That's real. That's real crystal. Yeah. It's real.
So?
Put them in your purse.
Put them. I can't do that.
Just
right.
Put them in your purse. Fill it up, please. Thank you.
Don't you feel like a heel flying first class with all the kids back in coach?
No, the kids are fine. The only flying I ever did as a kid was in the family station wagon. It wasn't to France. We used to have to go over to Aunt Laura and Uncle Arthur's house. Kids are okay. They're having the time of their lives.
At home.
Hello? Mom? Dad?
Kevin steps into his parents' bedroom. Their bed is unmade.
Mom? Dad? Where are you guys? Buzz?
The tarantula scurries in Buzz's terrarium.
Buzz?
Behind him, a BB rifle hangs over Buzz's bed.
Megan? Hello? Hello? Rod? Uncle Frank? Uncle Frank?
think he's just a joke.
Kevin enters the dark basement.
Megan? Lenny?
He reaches the bottom of the steps.
Is this a joke?
Kevin's wide-eyed gaze roams through the dark basement past an ironing board and laundry area, a single mannequin leg draped over a chair, and bald, armless mannequin torsos. Kevin's gaze stops at an oven-sized coal furnace with an iron grate like long, fierce jaws. Kevin's eyes bulge. The furnace roars to life with glowing coals.
It's all in my imagination. All in my imagination.
The iron grate rises and falls like snapping jaws. Kevin dashes upstairs. The grate slams down. Kevin bursts outside through the front door. Arms wheeling, he sprints through the snow in his slippers.
The cars are still here. They didn't go to the airport.
His mouth drops open. He leaves the driveway and darts back inside. In the kitchen, he strides over to his stool and sits down. Tapping his fingers, he frowns in thought. Slowly, understanding washes over his face and his eyes widen.
I made my family disappear.
Kevin, you're completely helpless.
No, Kevin, you're what the French call les incompétents.
Kevin, I'm going to feed you to my tarantula.
Kevin, you are such a disease.
There are 15 people in this house, and you're the only one who has to make trouble.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
A slow, satisfied smile spreads across Kevin's face.
I made my family disappear.
Later, munching on a bag of microwave popcorn, Kevin jumps up and down on his parents' bed. He tosses popcorn into his mouth, spilling everywhere, then flops playfully onto his back. Waving his arms and shaking his head, Kevin runs through the house. Mouth wide, he dashes into Buzz's room and opens a large trunk full of stuff. He picks up a Playboy magazine and opens it. His eyes widen, then he tosses it over his shoulder.
No clothes on anybody. Sickening.
He reaches into the trunk.
Cool firecrackers. I'll save these for later. Buzz, I'm going through all your private stuff. You better come out and pound me.
He winces at a photo of a plump girl.
Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof.
He slams it into the trunk. The chubby girlfriend has wild, gleaming eyes and braces. Kevin glances up at the BB rifle hanging on the wall and smiles. In the kitchen, he props open a small laundry chute door with a spatula. He lines four sports action figures along the edge of the chute. He takes aim and fires. He hits every target. The action figures land in a heap of laundry in the basement. When he shoots the spatula, the small square door swings shut. Later, ice cream, chocolate sauce, and marshmallows drip off the kitchen counter. Kevin slips a video entitled Angels with Filthy Souls into a VCR, then reclines in a leather armchair.
Who is it?
Kevin watches and spoons a heaping sundae into his mouth.
It's me, Snakes. I got the stuff.
Leave it on the doorstep and get the hell out of here.
All right, Johnny. But what about my money?
What money?
AC said you had some dough for me.
Matter of fact, how much do I owe you?
AC said 10%.
Too bad AC ain't in charge no more.
What do you mean?
Guys, I'm eating junk and watching rubbish. Yeah. You better come out and stop me.
He'll call you when he gets out. Hey, I tell you what I'm gonna give you, Snakes.
He pulls out a Tommy gun.
I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry. I'm going.
1, 2, 10.
Snakes collapses. Kevin hides his face and peeks through his hand.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Kevin stops the tape.
Mom!
On the plane, Kate wakes up. She grabs her purse, opens a leather passport holder, and counts silently to herself.
What's the matter? Honey?
I have a terrible feeling.
About what?
That we didn't do something.
Ah, now you feel that way because we left in such a hurry. We took care of everything. Believe me, we did.
Did I turn off the coffee?
No. I did.
Did you lock up?
Yeah.
Did you close the garage?
That's it. I forgot to close the garage. That's it.
No, that's not it.
What else could we be forgetting?
Kate's eyes shift. Then she bolts upright.
Kevin!
At home, Kevin drags a large wooden toboggan to the top of the stairs. He wears a hat, scarf, mittens, and jacket. Staring down at the open front door, he adjusts the angle of the sled. Satisfied, he climbs onto the toboggan, yanks his mittens securely over his wrists, then throws one end of his scarf over his shoulder. He grabs the sled's rope and nudges forward. Seesawing on the edge, he suddenly careens down. He zooms down the stairs, shoots out the front door, and soars over the front steps into a snowbank. Now, on the plane, a stewardess brings Peter a glass of water.
The captain's doing all he can. Your phones are still out of order. We'll call as soon as we land, Kate. I'm sure everything's okay.
Frank shakes his head.
Horrible. Horrible. Just horrible.
How could we do this? We forgot him.
We didn't forget him. We just miscounted.
What kind of mother am I?
If it makes you feel any better, I forgot my reading glasses.
Leslie, Peter, and Kate glare at Frank. Nighttime on Kevin's street.
Five families gone on one block alone. They all told me from their own mouths.
It's almost too easy.
Check it out. All the houses with nobody home have automatic timers on their lights. But I got it all figured out. Watch this.
It's the fake policeman.
Number 664 will be going on right about now.
Christmas lights flick on.
Oh. Wait. Number 672, right now.
More lights turn on.
Wait a minute. 671, now.
The Christmas lights at Kevin's house.
And that's the one, Marvin. That's the silver tuna.
Oh, it's very G.
Very G, huh? It's loaded. It's got lots of top flight goods. Stereos, VCRs.
Toys?
Probably looking at some very fine jewelry. Possible cash hoard. Odd marketable securities. Who knows? It's a gem. Grab you a crowbar. Crowbar's up.
You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful sots.
Inside, a cartoon plays on the TV. Our view drifts past the toboggan, Kevin's coat, scarf, and hat, to a pile of half-eaten junk food and a bowl coated in melted ice cream on a small table. Kevin naps in the leather armchair. Outside, the two crooks drive into Kevin's curved driveway in a blue van painted with the words, OK Plumbing. They glance down both ends of the street, then back the van into the side driveway toward the garage. Kevin wakes up instantly. Outside, the scruffy, beak-nosed Marv gets out of the van and approaches the house. His gold-tooth partner joins him.
Which way?
Go around back down the basement. Come on.
Kevin sees their hunched shadows as they creep past the curtained windows, each gripping a hooked iron crowbar. He jumps out of the chair. The crooks sneak down the outdoor steps to the basement. Kevin races down the hall, switching on lights. He flicks on the main basement light from upstairs.
I thought you said they were gone.
We're supposed to leave this morning.
Let's get out of here.
The two crooks sprint up the steps to the backyard. Now, in his parents' bedroom, Kevin hides under the bed. Eyes wide, he presses his fingers into the popcorn-strewn floor. Kevin stays frozen in place, his mouth agape with fear. At dawn, the airliner comes in for a landing.
Attention, s'il vous plaît.
Now, in the Paris airport, Kate dashes down a passageway, followed by the kids, then Peter, Leslie, and Frank. Kate rushes up to a blonde French woman talking on a payphone.
Yes, we have to use the phone, please.
Madame, que faites-vous?
I'm sorry, it's an emergency. We really have to make a call.
Mais que se passe-t-il?
Please, our brother's home alone.
Rendez-moi le téléphone.
Excuse me, just give us the phone.
Rendez-moi le téléphone.
Thank you. Thank you. Peter, I'm going to call the police. Why don't you book us a flight home? Here, get some change out of here. Call everybody you know. Oh, Leslie. Okay, here's my address book. You and Frank, call everybody who lives on our street. Maybe somebody can help us. What am I doing? Hello? Oh, she'll have to call you back.
At home, under the bed, Kevin pushes two bags away from his face.
This is ridiculous. Only a wimp would be hiding under a bed. And I can't be a wimp. I'm the man of the house.
He slides himself out from under the bed. Later, he walks out the front door and marches down the steps.
Hey! I'm not afraid anymore! I said I'm not afraid anymore! Do you hear me? I'm not afraid anymore!
A shadow engulfs him. Kevin looks at old man Marley's big black boots, metal shovel, and pale bulging eyes. Kevin runs into the house. Stooped over his trash can, Marley watches him go. Flinging the door shut, Kevin waves his arms and flees upstairs. He runs toward us, his mouth stretched as wide open as it can go, then hops into his parents' bed under a comforter blanket. Now in a police station.
Village Police Department.
Yeah, hi, look. I'm calling from Paris. I have a son who's home alone.
Our phones there are out of order, so I'd like somebody to go over to our house, tell him that we're coming home to get him.
Okay, let me connect you with Family Crisis Intervention.
No, it's not a family crisis.
Hold on. Larry, can you pick up? There's some lady on hold. Sounds kind of hyper.
What line, Rose?
Two.
Family Crisis Intervention, Sergeant Balzac.
I'm calling from Paris. I have a son who's home alone.
Has the child been involved in a violent altercation with a drunken and or mentally ill member of his immediate family?
No.
Has he been involved in a household accident?
I don't know. I hope not.
Has the child ingested any poison and or any other object that has become lodged in his throat?
No, he's just home alone.
And I would like somebody to go over to the house and
see that he's all right, just to check on him.
You want us to go to your house just to check on him?
Yes!
Let me connect you with the police department.
No, they just transferred me to you.
Rose!
Yeah?
Hyper on two.
Hang on.
Hold on, please.
No, please don't hang up. Please, don't. Any luck?
No. I couldn't get anybody.
Leslie?
I'm sorry, Kate. Nothing but a bunch of answering machines.
Somebody pick up. Pick up!
Oh, hi, ma'am. It's you again.
Yeah, hi, look. I'm calling from Paris. I have a son who's home alone, and I...
Okay. We'll send a policeman over to your house to check on your son.
Taking deep breaths, Kevin sits in bed, the blanket draped over his head. Slowly, he peeks out from under it. He whips the blanket over his head. A policeman stands at the front door. He pounds with his fist. Kevin pokes his head up and shifts his gaze back and forth. He dives back under the comforter. Every window is filled with light. The policeman pulls out a walkie-talkie.
There's no one home. The house looks secure. I'm the counter kids again.
Now, in the Paris airport.
I can't believe that you can't bump somebody or ask somebody or...
I'm sorry, but there's no way I can do that.
Well, isn't there a way, like, if you ask somebody? I mean, if you brought somebody up here and you explained to them that this is an emergency...
I cannot ask somebody.
They're sending a policeman over to the house to check on Kevin.
Well, that's a relief. Everything here is booked.
There's nothing to Chicago?
There's nothing to Chicago, New York, Nashville, you name it. Everything's gone.
What about a private plane?
No, I'm sorry. We don't do that.
The only thing they have is a booking for all of us on Friday morning.
Friday morning? That's 2 days away.
Look, honey, the kids are exhausted. You are exhausted.
There's absolutely nothing more that we can do in this airport. Now, I say we go over to Rob's, and that way we can call the police again, and they can get back to us.
Peter, Kevin is home all by himself. I'm not leaving here unless it's on an airplane.
Madam, we are doing everything we can. Now, if you want to stay at the airport, maybe we can get you on standby. It is a possibility that the seat will open up.
Okay?
Yes. I'll wait.
Bells will be ringing. The glad, glad news.
Bye.
Oh, what a Christmas. Bye, to have the blues.
Don't you get lost.
Kate and Peter hug. She waves to the rest of the family as they leave.
Please come home for Christmas. 'Cause I'll be happy Christmas once again.
Morning. Kevin stands at a bathroom mirror.
I took a shower washing every body part with actual soap, including all my major crevices, including in between my toes and in my belly button, which I never did before but sort of enjoyed. I washed my hair with the Don't Formula shampoo and used cream rinse for that Just Wash shine.
He sprays his armpits with deodorant.
I can't seem to find my toothbrush, so I'll pick one up when I go out today. Other than that, I'm in good shape.
He slaps on aftershave.
Ah!
Hands glued to his cheeks, his mouth opens in a wide O. Later, fully dressed, he wanders into Buzz's room. He glances up. On a top shelf, a tin for baseball cards rests next to a basketball. Buzz's tarantula terrarium, bright with fluorescent blue light, rests on the second shelf. Kevin climbs up the flimsy shelves. The second shelf bends under his weight. He grabs the top shelf with one hand and reaches for the baseball card tin. The basketball bounces across the heap of shelves. The tarantula terrarium is tipped over. Kevin emerges from the rubble. He finds the baseball tin.
All right. Buzz's life savings.
He grabs a wad of dollar bills and leaves the mess. The hairy tarantula skitters across the floor. Later, wearing his coat, hat, scarf, and mittens, Kevin walks out the back door. He checks the stairwell down to the basement, then tromps through the snow toward the street. Glancing up, he stops in his tracks. He spies the blue OK plumbing van parked in the driveway across the street.
I thought the Murphys went to Florida.
He shrugs, then continues on his way. Now, in a living room strewn with opened gifts, the gold-toothed crook plays with a remote-control racing car. Wearing a snorkeling mask, Marv recklessly swipes art objects into a sack with his crowbar.
You know, you're one of the great cat burglars of the world, Marv. You think you could keep it down a little in there, huh?
Hi, you've reached the Murphys. Please leave a message after you hear the beep.
Chuck, this is Peter McAllister again, and we're still in Paris at my brother's apartment. Let me give you the number here, okay? The country code is 33. The area code is 14. And the number is 694-876.
Hey, Harry?
Yeah?
That house we were at last night, was that the McAllisters?
Yeah.
Call me in Paris. You're right. They're gone.
Harry looks up from a kaleidoscope and grins.
I knew they were.
Silver tuna tonight.
A blizzard of kaleidoscopic shapes and colors. Now, in a pharmacy, Kevin approaches a silver-haired clerk.
How may I help you?
Is this toothbrush approved by the American Dental Association?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say, hon.
Can you please find out?
He takes it back. She purses her lips.
Herb!
Yeah?
I've got a question here about a toothbrush.
We glimpse Marley's black rubber boots stomp in.
Do you know, is this toothbrush approved by the American Dental Association?
I don't know.
Marley plods slowly down the aisle toward Kevin. He walks up beside him and slaps his bloody bandaged hand on the counter. Kevin's jaw drops open. Marley stares down at him, wrinkling his brow. Kevin backs down the aisle with a trance-like gaze locked on Marley.
Just tell me.
Oh, hon, you pay for that here.
Kevin keeps walking, toothbrush in hand.
Wait, son, you have to pay for that toothbrush. Son? Son? Hey! Jimmy, stop that boy!
Kevin runs into the street.
Hey! Hey!
Jimmy glances at a policeman across the street.
Shoplifter!
Kevin dashes into a park. The hefty policeman follows.
Hey, kid!
Kevin dodges trees and pedestrians. The policeman galumps after him.
Come back here!
Kevin slides across a skating pond on his knees. He slides through a hockey player's spread legs. The policeman collides with a skater and belly flops. Kevin scrambles to his feet at the edge of the frozen pond and keeps running. On his stomach, the policeman grits his teeth with frustration. Now, Kevin dashes across a bridge over a passing train. Later, his head hung sadly, Kevin shuffles down his street and glances at the toothbrush in his hand.
I'm a criminal.
He shakes his head. Now, in the Murphy's kitchen. Marv stuffs rags into the drains of a double sink, then turns on the faucet. Chomping gum, he flashes a leering grin at the sinks, then leaves with a VCR tucked under one arm and his sack slung over his shoulder. Outside, he heaves it all into the van.
It's so funny. It's so funny. What are you laughing at?
Marv climbs into the van with a knowing grin.
You did it again, didn't you? You left the water running, didn't you? What's wrong with you? Why do you do that? I told you not to do it.
Harry, it's our calling card.
Calling card.
All the great ones leave their mark. We're the Wet Bandits.
You're sick, you know that? You're really sick.
I'm not sick.
Yes, you are.
I'm not sick!
That's a sick thing to do.
The van rolls down the driveway. Kevin ambles along the sidewalk, eyes downcast, then crosses the driveway.
Don't tell me what to do, okay? I can do it if I want to.
The van speeds toward him.
I'm not sick.
Hey, watch out!
It stops an inch from Kevin's face. He staggers a few steps away.
Hey, hey, you gotta watch out for traffic, son, you know?
Sorry.
Sandy, don't visit the funeral homes, little buddy.
Okay, okay. Merry Christmas.
Harry smiles. His gold tooth sparkles. Recognizing him, Kevin's mouth flaps open, and he walks across the street. Harry squints at him.
What's the matter?
I don't like the way that kid looked at me. Did you see that?
You ever seen him before?
I saw 100 kids this week.
Let's see what house he goes into.
Kevin strides down the street, his shoulders tensed. The blue van creeps out of the driveway and shadows him. Kevin stops walking and glances over his shoulder. Harry stops the van. Faking idle glances, Harry and Marv look randomly around the inside of the van. Taking a deep breath, Kevin starts walking again. The van rolls along, keeping 20 feet behind him. Kevin breaks into a jog. Harry speeds up a little.
Why is he going faster?
I told you something's wrong. See, I knew he looked at me weird. Why would he run?
Kevin runs faster. Now, our view drops down the Gothic facade of a towering cathedral-like church. A colorful, half-sized manger scene sits in the snow-covered front yard of the church. Kevin dashes toward it. The van rolls along slowly. Marv eyeballs the street. Harry squints at the church and slows the van to a halt several yards from the manger. Marv rolls down his window. They stare at the manger scene.
Maybe we're in the church.
I'm not going in there.
Me neither.
Let's get out of here.
They drive away. Our view drifts through the hay-filled manger. A sculpted baby Jesus lies beside a couple of lambs. Disguised as a shepherd, Kevin hunches with a woolen blanket draped over him. Glancing up, he throws down his staff and robe and runs back down the street.
When those guys come back, I'll be ready.
Nighttime. Every single light in Kevin's house is ablaze. Silhouetted figures pass in front of the windows.
Rocking around, Christmas tree, happy Christmas party.
The van arrives. Marv rolls down his window. Both men frown with confusion. Through the window's sheer curtains, they glimpse someone drinking. A male figure glides past. Marv and Harry blink in disbelief.
Did they come back?
Iris.
Harry squints harder at the house. Inside, activated by strings, dressed-up mannequins sit at a card table. One bobs to the music as the other drinks a can of soda. A life-sized cardboard cutout of basketball player Michael Jordan slides past them, his feet locked to a moving train on a set of toy train tracks. Kevin dances and controls the mannequins with one line of string tied around his knee and two others in his hands. A female mannequin wearing a blonde wig spins slowly on a record player with one hand holding a champagne glass. Marv and Harry study the shadows in the windows.
I'll come back tomorrow, maybe they'll be gone by then. You better get out of here before somebody sees us.
They drive away. Kevin pulls back one of the curtains, watches them go, and smiles with satisfaction. Now, in Paris, in a crowded apartment, several of the kids watch the dubbed version of It's a Wonderful Life on TV.
Non, attendez un peu. Il est inutile d'attendre 24 heures et je n'ai aucun conseil à demander. C'est tout décidé, je sais ce que j'ai à dire. C'est non, non, en aucun cas.
Frank walks in with a tray of shrimp.
Frank.
He offers the tray to the kids.
Mes petits enfants, do you want a little shrimp, huh?
Peter on the phone.
Do you speak English? Parlez anglais. Well, is there, I mean, est-ce qu'il y a une personne qui parle anglais là?
Did you get anybody?
I am looking for my son. Do you know where he is? No, I can't find anybody. They're home. They've all gone shopping. Nobody's home for the holidays.
Megan plops herself down near Buzz.
This is so pointless.
What?
We're here riding in this apartment. Kevin's at home. Mom's at the airport.
So?
You're not at all worried about Kevin.
Why should I be? No, he's acted like a jerk once too many times, and this time he caught it in the butt.
He's so little and helpless. Don't you think he's flipped out?
The little child can use a couple of days in the real world.
You're not at all worried that something might happen to him.
No, for three reasons. A, I'm not that lucky. Two, we have smoke detectors. And D, we live in the most boring street in the United States of America, where nothing even remotely dangerous will ever happen. Period.
Now, at Kevin's house, the statue delivery car slams into the jockey statue in the driveway. The skinny delivery boy gets out, dumps the pizza box on the car's hood, and sets the statue right side up again. He finds a note on the front door which reads, "Back door, please." He takes the note and jogs through the snow to the back door.
Who is it?
It's Little Nero, sir. I have your pizza.
Leave it on the doorstep and get the hell out of here.
The video.
Okay. But what about the money?
Kevin presses play.
What money?
Well, you have to pay for your pizza, sir.
That a fact? How much do I owe you?
Kevin fast forwards.
That'll be $11.80, sir.
Kevin slips $12 through the doggy flap. As the pizza boy reaches for the cash, Kevin presses play on the remote control.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
The pizza boy sneers.
Cheapskate.
Hey, I'm gonna give you to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead. 1, 2, 10.
The delivery boy trips backward over a couple of trash cans and crawls through the snow. Bending over, he scrambles to his feet and sprints back to the driveway in a panic. He stumbles onto his knees, then rushes to his car. Kevin opens the back door and picks up the pizza.
A lovely cheese pizza, just for me.
He takes it inside. Now, in the Paris airport.
To Dallas, Fort Worth.
Kate stands at a boarding gate with a petite old woman.
So we have the $500, the pocket translator, the two first-class seats. That's an upgrade from your coach.
Is that a real Rolex?
Do you think it is?
No.
But who can tell? I also have a ring.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Come on, Irene, they're boarding.
Oh, this gal has offered us 2 first-class tickets if we go Friday. Plus a ring, a watch, a pocket translator, $500, and
the earrings. You love the earrings.
She's got her own earrings, a whole shoebox full of them, dangly ones. Come on, come on.
No, but...
Her husband leads her away.
I'm desperate. I'm begging you, from a mother to a mother, please.
Oh, Ed,
please.
Oh, all right.
Dear Santa Claus, I got a little sister last year. This year, I'd rather have some clay dough.
Now, lying in his parents' bed, Kevin stares mournfully at Johnny Carson on TV. With his hands clasped over his belly, Kevin pulls a framed photograph of his family out from under a pillow and studies it.
I didn't mean it. If you come back, I'll never be a pain in the butt again. I promise. Good night.
He glances around self-consciously, then kisses the photo. He slips it back under the pillow and switches off a bedside lamp. Pulling up the blanket, he snuggles into bed, nestled among the pillows. The next morning, Kevin stands bare-chested at the bathroom mirror, holding a comb like a microphone.
Of a white Christmas.
Lip-syncing the words, he swaggers in his towel. He runs the comb through his wet hair, then sprays his armpits with Right Guard. He pours some Brute aftershave into his palm, claps his hands together, then pats his cheeks. His eyes widen and nostrils flare. Buzz's tarantula creeps behind the toilet. Later, in a grocery store, Kevin pushes a shopping cart down the dairy aisle. The cart comes up to his chin. He glances at cartons of juice and refrigerated bags of cheese, then selects a half gallon of whole milk. Later, he wheels the cart up to the checkout lane. The young, brown-haired checkout girl eyes him suspiciously. Expressionless, he pushes the full, heavy cart toward her. Frowning, she peers into his cart. He puffs out his cheeks casually and places his food onto the checkout counter. He has Wonder Bread, fabric softener sheets, toilet paper, macaroni and cheese, Tide detergent, and milk. The checkout girl raises her eyebrows and starts totaling the items.
Are those microwave dinners any good?
I don't know.
I'll give them a whirl.
He pages through a magazine. The checkout girl smiles, then holds up a bag of plastic soldiers.
For the kids.
She reaches for the orange juice.
Hold on, I got a coupon for that.
He hands it over.
It was in the paper this morning.
1983.
Okay.
He digs into his pocket and hands her a $20 bill.
Are you here all by yourself?
Ma'am, I'm 8 years old. You think I'd be here alone? I don't think so.
Where's your mom?
My mom's in the car.
Where's your father?
He's at work.
What about your brothers and your sisters?
I'm an only child.
Where do you live?
I can't tell you that.
Why not?
Because you're a stranger.
She purses her lips and finishes the sale. Later, Kevin ambles along a sidewalk, holding a straining plastic grocery bag in each hand. Both bags burst open. His groceries spill all over the sidewalk. Later, in the basement, he measures laundry detergent and pours it into the washing machine. He slams the machine door shut and sets the cycle dial. Moving on to the dryer, he swiftly pulls out a pile of clean clothes and puts them into a basket. Holding the basket, he gapes fearfully at the huge furnace's snapping jaws. Kevin's eyes narrow.
Shut up!
The furnace grate slams shut. Its red-hot embers cool instantly to black. Kevin nods. Now, the crooks study Kevin's backyard from the van parked on a side street.
I don't get it. I mean, right now it looks like there's nobody home. Last night the place is jumping. Something ain't right. Go check it out.
Marv nods, deep in thought. Harry glances at him and double takes. Marv squints at Harry, then his eyebrows rise.
Now?
No, tomorrow, Egghead. Now! Go ahead! Now.
Kevin washes dishes in the kitchen and sees Marv's shadow through the curtain on the back door window. Marv jiggles the doorknob, then sticks his foot through the doggy flap. His shoe falls onto the kitchen floor.
Shit.
He reaches in and nabs it. Kevin grabs the remote control.
Get the hell out of here.
All right, Johnny. But what about my money?
What money?
AC said you had some dough for me.
Fair effect. How much do I owe you?
AC said 10%.
Outside, Marv gapes.
Bad AC ain't in charge no more.
What do you mean?
He's upstairs taking a bath. He'll call you when he gets out.
Kevin sets a pot by the door.
Hey, I tell you what I'm going to give you, Snakes.
He grabs a lighter and firecrackers.
I'm going to give you to the count of ten to get your ugly, yellow, no good keister off my property before I pump your guts full of lead.
All right, Johnny, I'm sorry.
Kevin lights the firecrackers in the pot. Moves away and covers his ears. Marv dives over the trash cans into the snow. Inside, Kevin blocks his ears and laughs hysterically. Marv lurches and trips toward the van. Kevin lip-syncs the words.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
What happened?
I don't know who's in there, but somebody just got blown away.
Huh?
Somebody beat us to the job. They're in there. Two of them. There was arguing. One of them blew the other one away.
Who?
I don't know. I thought I recognized one of their voices. And I know I heard that name Snakes before.
Snakes? Snakes, Snakes. I don't know no Snakes.
Snakes. Let's get out of here.
Hold it, hold it. Let's wait and see who it is. We work this neighborhood, too.
Yeah?
Supposing the cops finger us for a job, and they start asking us questions about a murder in the area. Wouldn't it be nice to have a face to go with their questions?
That's a good idea.
Of course it's a good idea. Snakes.
He sounded like a snake.
At an airport ticket counter, an agent glances at his computer and winces at Kate.
Everything's full.
Everything's full.
I'm very sorry, but it is Christmas Eve.
What about another airline?
Nothing available. May I help you get a hotel room in the city? Tomorrow afternoon, we can get you a flight to Chicago.
I can't wait that long.
I'm terribly sorry, ma'am, but we're doing absolutely everything we can.
Kate shakes her head. Another customer steps forward.
Go ahead. On your way. I'm sorry. Excuse me, you have places to go, people to see. Got a ticket there. It's good. Excuse me. Look, I have been awake for almost 60 hours. I'm tired and I'm dirty. I have been from Chicago to Paris to Dallas to... Where the hell am I?
Scranton.
I am trying to get home to my 8-year-old son. And now that I'm this close, you're telling me it's hopeless.
I'm sorry.
No, 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 no way. This is Christmas, the season of perpetual hope.
Ma'am, if...
And I don't care if I have to get out on your runway and hitchhike. If it costs me everything I own... If I have to sell my soul to the devil himself, I am going to get home to my son.
Ma'am, if there was anything at all I could do for
do
you
it.
Today...
Do anything.
I can get you a hotel room. You
what?
Excuse me. Can you excuse us for a second? Can I see you for a second, please? Excuse us.
A plump, double-chinned man leads her away.
Couldn't help but hearing you got a little bit of a dilemma there. We got a crisis ourselves. Allow me to introduce myself. Gus Polinski. How are you? Polka King of the Midwest.
He wears a bright yellow windbreaker. Kate stares blankly.
The Kenosha Kickers?
Six band members wave.
No? That's okay. I thought you might have recognized. Anyways, I had a few hits a few years ago. That's why, just polka, polka, polka. Polka, polka, polka. No? Twin Lakes Polka. Damavuji Polka, a.k.a. Kiss Me Polka, Polka Twist.
Well, these are songs.
Yeah, we some fairly big hits for us, you know, in the early 70s, you know. Yeah, we sold about 623 copies of that.
In Chicago?
No, Sheboygan. Very big in Sheboygan. They loved it, you know.
I'm sorry, did you say you could help me?
Anyway, I'm done rambling. Our flight was canceled, so we gotta drive. So, see the guy in the yellow jacket over there by the budget sign? He's gonna rent us a nice big van, and we're gonna drive to Milwaukee. Now, I heard you had some problems. You're getting to Chicago to see your kid or something?
My son, we left, and he's there.
Oh, jeez. If you have to get to Chicago, we'll gladly drive you. It's on the way to Milwaukee.
You'd give me a ride?
Sure we will. Why not? You know, you got to get home and see your kid.
A ride to Chicago?
Sure, you know, it's Christmas time.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
You don't mind going with some polka bums?
No, I'd love to.
She beams gratefully. Now, Marv and Harry snooze in the parked van overlooking the side of the house. Kevin slips out the back door carrying a saw and a stepladder. Harry wakes up and spies Kevin sawing off the top of a young evergreen. An evil grin spreads across his face. He taps Marv.
Hey, Marv. Marv. Look at this.
Marv glances up, his mouth hanging open lazily. Kevin grabs the small Christmas tree as it falls.
I think we're getting scammed by a kindergarten.
Kevin tromps back toward the house, dragging the tree behind him. Later, inside, he hangs shiny red and gold balls on his miniature tree. Strung with colored lights, the tree stands right next to a living room window. Kevin hangs a large red ball near the top of the tree, a few inches above his own head. Behind him, Harry peeks in through the window. Kevin sees him in the ball's metallic reflection and looks across the room.
Dad, can you come here and help me?
Harry smirks and taps Marv.
Remember that kid we saw the other day? He lives here.
Well, if the kid's there, the parents gotta be.
Harry shakes his head.
He's home alone.
Harry grins slyly, then points toward the backyard. Kevin bolts upstairs.
Kid, you want to come back tonight?
Uh-huh.
Even with the kid here?
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's a good idea,
Harry. Hey, look, that house is the only reason we started working this block in the first place. Ever since I laid eyes on that house, I wanted it.
So let's take it one step at a time, okay? We'll unload the van, we'll get a bite to eat, and we'll come back about 9 o'clock.
Kevin eavesdrops.
This way it's dark, then.
Yeah, kids are scared of the dark.
You're afraid of the dark, too, Marv. You know you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Not. You are so.
Mom, where are you?
Now, in the polka truck. The seven polka players perform in the cramped storage bay of the truck. Kate sits beside the plump Gus, who plays clarinet enthusiastically.
You play? You want to try it?
Kate pushes Gus's clarinet politely back at him. He plays it himself, winking at her and bouncing it back and forth. The rented truck drives down a snowy highway under a gray sky. Nighttime. Kevin marches toward a miniature house with a green roof, red trim, and Christmas lights. A sign reads, S. Claus. A woman steps out wearing a leather jacket over her green elf costume.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
Hey, nice shoes.
Oh, thanks.
Is he still here? It's really important that I see him.
Well, he's getting in his car. I guess if you hurry, you can catch him.
Across the street.
Damn, how low can you get giving Kris Kringle a parking ticket on Christmas Eve? What's next, rabies shots for the Easter Bunny?
Santa, hold on.
Santa quickly chucks his cigarette.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Yeah, if you make it quick, Santa's got a little get-together he's late for.
Okay. I know you're not the real Santa Claus.
What makes you say that? Just out of curiosity.
I'm old enough to know how it works.
All right.
But I also know that you work for him. I'd like you to give him a message.
Shoot.
I'm Kevin McAllister, 671 Lincoln Boulevard. Do you need the phone number?
No, that's all right.
Okay, this is extremely important. Would you please tell him that instead of presents this year, I just want my family back? No toys, nothing but Peter, Kate, Buzz, Megan, Linny, and Jeff. And my aunt and my cousins. And if he has time, my Uncle Frank. Okay?
Okay. See what I can do.
Thanks.
Wait, hold on a second. My elf took the last of the candy canes home to her boyfriend.
That's okay.
No, don't be silly. Everybody sees Santa's gotta get something. Here, pull out your little paw there.
A few tic-tacs.
There you go. Don't spoil your dinner.
I won't. Thanks.
Kevin walks away. The young man dressed as Santa gets into his small, rusty car. The car lurches, then dies. Santa punches his dashboard. Now, under a pitch-black sky, Kevin ambles down a sidewalk. Colorful Christmas lights glow in the trees and bushes of the cozy houses. His head hanging low, he passes a driveway full of cars. He pauses to stare at a family bringing gifts into a warmly lit house full of people. Kevin blinks sadly as he watches the family through a window, gathered around a long banquet table, laughing and smiling. In another room, he sees children and adults decorating a Christmas tree. He takes one last lingering look, then turns away and mopes down the sidewalk toward home. From a distance, we see Kevin's small form as he shuffles past the towering church. He kicks the snow as he walks, taking slow, stunted steps. Turning to stare at the illuminated manger scene, his gaze shifts to an enormous arched window of stained glass above the church door. He blinks thoughtfully. Snowflakes fall softly as he tromps toward the church through the unbroken snow. Now, in the front of the church, our view drifts over rows of a children's choir wearing gold and red robes. Kevin paces down the long central aisle of the church. Glancing at the soaring ceilings, he removes his hat and mittens. Most of the pews are empty. Kevin's gaze lingers on a statue of a robed saint who holds up a small cross. Haloed saints and angels crowd the arched stained glass windows. Kevin takes a seat toward the front of the church. Gazing upward, he loosens his scarf. Slowly, he turns to glance across the aisle. Old man Marley sits a row behind and meets his gaze. Kevin's jaw drops open in shock. Marley peers down the aisle, then glances back at Kevin. He stands abruptly and steps across the aisle. Kevin cowers in his seat, his mouth agape. Marley gazes down at him. A warm smile tugs at his gaunt, bearded cheeks.
Merry Christmas.
Puzzled, Kevin frowns.
May I sit down?
Kevin nods, his mouth still hanging open. Marley sits next to him in the pew and gazes at the choir.
That's my granddaughter up there, the little red-haired girl. She's about your age. You know her?
No.
You live next to me, don't you? You can say hello when you see me. You don't have to be afraid. There's a lot of things going around about me, but none of it's true. Okay?
Kevin nods.
Been a good boy this year?
I think so.
You swear to it?
No.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Well, this is the place to be if you're feeling bad about yourself.
It is?
I think so.
Are you feeling bad about yourself?
No.
I've been kind of a pain lately. I said some things I shouldn't have. I really haven't been too good this year.
Yeah.
I'm kind of upset about it because I really like my family. Even though sometimes I say I don't. Sometimes I even think I don't. Do you get that?
I think so. How you feel about your family is a complicated thing.
Especially with an older brother.
Deep down, you always love them. But you can forget that you love them. And you can hurt them, and they can hurt you. And that's not just because you're young. You want to know the real reason why I'm here right now?
Sure.
I came to hear my granddaughter sing. And I can't come and hear her tonight.
You have plans?
No. I'm not welcome.
At church?
Oh, you're always welcome at church. I'm not welcome with my son. Years back, before you and your family moved on the block, I had an argument with my son.
How old is he?
Well, he's grown up. We lost our tempers, and I said I didn't care to see him anymore. He said the same. We haven't spoken to each other since.
If you miss him, why don't you call him?
I'm afraid if I call him, he won't talk to me.
How do you know?
I don't know. I'm just afraid he won't.
No offense, but aren't you a little old to be afraid?
You can be a little old for a lot of things. You're never too old to be afraid.
That's true. I've always been afraid of our basement. It's dark, there's weird stuff down there, and it smells funny, that sort of thing. It's bothered me for years.
Basements are like that.
Then I made myself go down there to do some laundry, and I found out it's not so bad. All this time I've been worrying about it, but if you turn on the lights, it's no big deal.
What's your point?
My point is you should call your son.
What if he won't talk to me?
At least you'll know. Then you can stop worrying about it, and you won't have to be afraid anymore. I don't care how mad I was, I talked to my dad, especially around the holidays.
I don't know.
Just give it a shot, for your granddaughter anyway. I'm sure she misses you, and the presents.
I sent her a check.
Wish my grandparents did that. They always sent me clothes. Last year, I got a sweater with a big bird knitted on it.
Oh, that's nice.
Not for a guy in the second grade. You can get beat up for wearing something like that.
Oh?
Yeah. I have a friend who got nailed because there was a rumor he wore dinosaur pajamas.
You better run along home where you belong. You think about what I said, all right?
Okay.
It's nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
Marley extends his wrinkled, bandaged hand. They shake. Kevin starts to leave, then pauses.
What about you?
Me?
Yeah, you and your son.
We'll see what happens. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Kevin returns Marley's kind smile and sets off down the aisle. At the sound of the bell, Kevin's sunny smile fades. He breaks into a run and bolts out of the church. Arms flailing, he dashes down the sidewalk as fast as he can. He rounds the corner to his street. Christmas tree lights turn on in the yards of the empty neighboring houses. Just as Kevin reaches his own front steps, the white pinpoints of Christmas lights in the bushes and around the dark windows flash into life. He closes the front door behind him, locks it, and leans against it.
This is my house. I have to defend it.
Upstairs, he sweeps off his desk and spreads out a crayon map of the house entitled Battle Plan. In the front hall, he kneels before the door with the rug rolled up and places Micro Machine trucks and airplanes in front of the door. Outside, he splashes a bucket of water over the freezing front steps. In the basement, he grabs an electric charcoal starter. Buzz's tarantula creeps into view. Upstairs, Kevin hooks the glowing red-hot charcoal starter around the brass knob of the front door. Outside, he hoses down the steps to the basement. Inside, he paints thick roofing tar on the basement stairs, then pushes a long nail through an asphalt roof shingle. Later, he runs a rope from an attic window to his treehouse and ties it to a treehouse rafter. In the kitchen, he squirts caulking glue onto a sheet of plastic wrap. In the dining room, he pushes a cart piled with feathers and an electric fan. Next to his tree below the window, he puts ornaments on the floor. As he picks up two paint cans, the tarantula skitters past unnoticed. Finally, the Christmas tree lights blink on. Kevin opens the microwave and removes his macaroni and cheese. The microwave clock reads 8:57. Outside, Harry and Marv park the van across the street from Kevin's well-lit house.
Okay, we'll check it out first. We can always come back for the truck.
Harry dons a black cap as he and Marv get out of the van, each carrying a crowbar.
How do you want to go in?
We'll go to the back door. Maybe he'll let us in. You never know.
Yeah, he's a kid. Kids are stupid.
At the dinner table, Kevin crosses himself.
Bless his highly nutritious microwaveable macaroni and cheese dinner and the people who sold it on sale. Amen.
Seated at the head of the candlelit table, Kevin unfolds his napkin and puts it in his lap. He picks up his fork and knife. The grandfather clock reads 9 o'clock. Kevin crumples his napkin and blows out the candles. He races into the kitchen and grabs the BB rifle.
This is it. Don't get scared now.
He leans against the wall by the back door. Every light in Kevin's house is on as the crooks tromp through the backyard. Their shadows appear at the door window.
Merry Christmas, little fella. We know that you're in there and that you're all alone.
Yeah, come on, kid, open up.
Kevin crouches at the doggy flap.
Santa Claus and his elf.
He pokes the gun out.
We're not gonna hurt you.
No, no. Got some nice presents for you.
Kevin aims at Harry's crotch.
Now and open the door.
Shoot! What?
Harry hops down the path holding his crotch.
What? What? What happened?
Get that little...
Marv kneels at the door and pokes his own head through the doggy flap. Kevin lies on his belly with the gun aimed at Marv's forehead. Marv fakes a grin.
Hello.
He jerks back and grabs his forehead.
Yes! Yes!
The little jerk is armed!
That's it! That's it! I'm going around the front, you go down the basement!
Harry storms across the backyard. Marv stands up, plants his feet in the ground, and glares. Now we glimpse the front steps coated with glistening ice. Clutching his overcoat closed, Harry tramps angrily to the front steps and marches up. Ow! Harry lies on his back, his arms and legs splayed. In the backyard, Marv approaches the head of the icy basement stairwell, his googly eyes bulging. He takes one step down. Marv slips, bumps down the icy stairs, and lands in a heap.
Ow!
Still holding his crowbar, he sits up slowly and hunches over, slipping from side to side on his knees. He hooks his crowbar into the basement door window pane, steadies himself, and tries to peek through the window curtain. His knees give way. Now Harry jerks himself up onto his hands and knees. He grabs onto the railing and pulls himself up the stairs at an angle, his legs slipping sideways across the steps. He reaches the top, flips backward on his head, and lands at the bottom. Now, Marv hooks his crowbar over the basement door handle and struggles to pull himself up as his feet slide around. He lurches to his feet and spreads his legs, bracing them against the stairwell walls. He jams the straight end of the crowbar between the door and door frame. He tries again, slamming against the bar and gritting his teeth. Yanking it around, he finally pulls it out and tries the door handle. The door swings open easily. Marv steps in, holding the crowbar like a sword. He pushes the door shut. A single bare bulb glows on the low ceiling. Marv paces forward slowly, his gaze shifting through the cluttered basement. Absently, he reaches for a chain to turn on a light bulb just below the laundry chute. The chain and bulb drop into his hand. He glances up. An iron tied to the chain hurtles down toward his face. It hits him smack in the forehead. Sprawled on his back, he looks up. The arched imprint of the iron is burned in red on his face. He gapes, bug-eyed. Harry wakes up on the front steps.
That's it, you little... Oh, not this time.
Harry manages to climb up to the front door. The doorknob glows red hot. Unaware, he grabs it. Gripping his wrist, he staggers backward. Smoke rises from his open palm. He slips backward, rolls over, bumbles headfirst down the icy steps, and shoves his hand into a snowbank. He stares at his palm. The M from the knob is burned into his flesh.
Yes!
Kevin pumps his arm triumphantly. Now, Marv's shoes are abandoned in the tar-coated basement stairs leading up to the house. One sock lies stuck in the tar. He pulls his bare foot out of the second. He yanks himself up the sticky steps, gripping both handrails, then steps right down on the nail. He falls into the basement and clutches his foot. Harry runs to the back door, flinging his arms for balance. He kicks the door flap, then spits into his good hand. He tests the doorknob's temperature.
Dead kid.
The opening door triggers a blowtorch suspended from a cabinet. White-hot flames shoot across the top of his head. He spins outside and dives headfirst into a snowbank. He lifts his head from the snow. A pink, star-shaped burn smolders on his head with a tiny patch of hair in its center. He looks up with a pained grimace. Now, limping on tar-covered feet, Marv grabs his crowbar and steps outside. Wincing, Harry gingerly touches the upper edge of his cap. He leaps up and barges in through the back door.
Where are you, you little creep?
With his head still smoking, he clenches his fists. Outside, Marv drags himself up the steps, into the backyard, and lurches barefoot through the snow, swinging his arms angrily. He hobbles a few steps, then spots an open window on the first floor.
Harry! I'm coming in!
He charges forward, duck-footed. Harry marches up to the closed dining room door.
It's too late for you, kid. We're already in the house. We're gonna get you.
Okay, come and get me.
Kevin secures a booby trap rope to the fan. Harry walks face first into the gluey, clinging plastic wrap. He yanks it off.
Now you're dead!
Walking into the rope, he activates the fan. The feathers shower over him in a soft cloud. He stands perfectly still, his face, burnt scalp, and shoulders glued with feathers. Now, at the open window, Marv glances around the room. A wild grin spreads across his face. He plunks his feet down inside. He crushes sharp ornaments.
I'm gonna kill that kid!
Balancing on his heels, he stands but steps on another glass ornament. He hobbles out of the room. Harry tries to wipe off the feathers. Two owl-like tufts of feathers cling to his cap above his ears.
Marv!
Harry?
Why the hell did you take your shoes off?
Why the hell you dressed like a chicken?
Harry glowers. Now on the stairs.
I'm up here, you morons! Come and get me!
They slip on the toy cars.
You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
Kevin heads upstairs. Harry goes after him, stepping on Marv's stomach. Upstairs, Kevin swings a can of paint tied to the banister.
Heads up!
It smacks Marv.
Don't worry, Marv. I'll get him for you.
Harry!
A second can knocks Harry on top of Marv. Kevin hops over a wire. He checks its tautness, then runs down the hall.
He's only a kid, Harry. We can take him.
Oh, shut up, will you?
Ooh.
What is it?
You're missing some teeth.
Where? That's my goal, too. My goal, too. I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
They stumble upstairs.
You bomb me with one more can, kid, and I'll snap up your cojones and boil them in motor oil.
Marv gnashes his teeth. In his parents' room, Kevin dials 911.
911 emergency. Earl, my house is being robbed. My address is 656 Lincoln Boulevard. My name's Murphy.
Kevin dives under the hallway wire and heads for the attic.
Watch, because you never know what's up there. There he is!
Harry flips over the wire. Marv trips and grabs Kevin's ankle.
Yeah, I got him, Harry!
Kevin sees the tarantula on the attic steps.
Harry, get up! Give me a hand!
Kevin reaches for the huge spider.
I got him! Harry, help me! Get up!
Straining, Kevin grabs the spider, then turns and lowers it onto Marv's iron-printed face. It creeps over his nose. Kevin bolts up the stairs. Marv sits up and knocks the tarantula onto Harry's unconscious belly. It lands upside down, but flips itself right side up. Cowering, Marv twitches in disgust. The tarantula scurries toward Harry's chest. Upstairs, Kevin grabs a set of bicycle handlebars, which are balanced across the rope to the treehouse. He gazes across his backyard, squeezes his eyes shut, gives a determined nod, then perches at the open window's edge. In the hallway, Marv hovers crazily over Harry.
What are you doing, Marv?
Harry, don't move.
Marv?
Don't move.
Marv, what are you doing?
Marv raises his crowbar. He cracks Harry across the chest.
Did I get him?
The tarantula escapes.
Did I get him? Where is it? Where is it?
Never mind, did you get him? How do you like it, huh? You jerk! Get the kid for it! Get the kid!
He shoves Marv upstairs. Kevin takes a deep breath. He pushes off from the window ledge and trolleys across the backyard, swinging his legs 30 feet above ground and zooming toward the treehouse. Kevin lands in the treehouse and accidentally kicks out the back wall. Harry and Marv look out the attic window.
Where'd he go?
Maybe committed suicide.
Down here, you big horse's ass! Come and get me before I call the police!
Let's get him!
Wait, wait. It's just what he wants us to do. It's to go back downstairs through his funhouse so we get all tore up.
You gotta call the cops!
He's not calling the... From a treehouse! Come on.
Harry grabs the rope.
Out the window?
Yeah.
Not going out the window?
What, are you scared, Marv? Are you afraid? Come on, get out here.
Gripping the rope, Harry hangs above the backyard and shuffles along, inch by inch.
Come on.
Marv's eyes bulge with terror. Still standing on the sloped roof, he stares dizzily at the ground below.
Come on!
He slips and hangs beside Harry.
Come on.
Let's go back, Harry!
Shut it, Marv!
Kevin emerges with a pair of hedge trimmers.
Hey, guys. Check this out.
Go back.
Go back.
Marv and Harry retreat, hand over hand. Kevin cuts the rope. Clinging to the remaining rope, the crooks swing across the yard, slam into a brick wall, and plop onto their backs. Arms and legs sprawling, they exchange a stunned gaze. As Kevin races out of the treehouse and heads toward the street, Marv helps up Harry.
There you go. There he is!
Harry elbows Marv out of his way and scrambles after Kevin. Marv hobbles on his bare heels. Kevin sprints across his driveway and crosses the street. Kevin pauses in the Murphy's driveway.
There he is!
Hey, I'm calling the cops!
Wait. He wants us to follow him. I got a better idea. Come on.
Grinding his teeth, Marv limps after Harry. At the Murphy's, Kevin opens a bulkhead door and climbs down into the basement. Water showers into the flooded basement. Kevin sloshes through the knee-deep water and runs up the steps to the kitchen door.
Hiya, pal. We outsmarted you this time. Get over here.
Harry hangs him on a wall hook by his sweater.
What are we going to do to him, Harry?
I'll do exactly what he did to us. And I'll burn his head with a blowtorch.
Go ahead, smash his face with an iron.
I'd slap him right in the face with a paint can, maybe.
Old man Marley creeps in with his shovel.
What I'm going to do is bite off every one of these little fingers, one at a time.
Harry opens his mouth to bite. Marley knocks out Marv with his shovel. Marley smacks Harry's face.
Come on, let's get you home.
Marley lifts Kevin off the hook and carries him out. Later, two police cars jerk to a halt in front of the Murphy house. In his own house, Kevin pulls back a curtain and watches several policemen surround and enter the house. The red lights on their patrol cars flash and spin. Kevin smiles. One officer escorts the handcuffed Marv and Harry out of the house.
Nice move. Always leaving the water running. Now we know each and every house that you've hit.
A peeved look crosses Harry's bruised face as he glances at Marv.
Hey, you know, we've been looking for you two guys for a long time.
Yeah. Well, remember, we're the Wet Bandits. Wet Bandits.
Shut up!
Kevin grins. Come on. The officer pushes the crooks into a patrol car.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
The patrol car backs out of the driveway. Harry turns and glares at Kevin with one black eye swollen shut. Kevin waves and smiles sweetly. Harry sneers, mumbling silently with a fat lip. As the car drives away and the other officers leave the Murphy house, Kevin pulls back the curtain. Later, in his bathrobe, he brings a glass of milk and a plate of cookies and carrots into the living room and places them on a table by the fireplace. He straightens a gift under his tree, then adjusts one of the seven stockings hanging from the mantel.
And have yourself.
He sits and gently taps his foot. At dawn, the polka truck speeds down a highway.
I'm a bad parent. I'm a bad parent.
You're not. You know, you're beating yourself up there. You know, well, this happens. This thing happens. You know, you want to talk about bad parents? Look at us. I mean, we're on the road 48, 49 weeks out of the year. We hardly see our families. You know, Joe over there, gosh, you know, he forgets his kids' names half the time. Ziggy over there, he's never even met his kid. Eddie. Let's just hope none of them write a book about him.
Tell me, have you ever gone on vacation and left your child home?
No. No. But I did leave one at a funeral parlor once. Yeah, it was terrible, too. You know, I was all distraught and everything, you know, the wife and I. We left the little tyke there in the funeral parlor all day. All day. You know, we went back at night when we came to our senses. And there he was. Apparently, he was there alone all day with a corpse. Now, he was okay, you know, after 6-7 weeks. And I came around, started talking again. But he's okay. You know, they get over it. Kids are resilient like that.
Maybe we shouldn't talk about this.
You brought it up. I was just, trying to cheer you up.
I'm sorry I did.
Now, snow falls thickly onto Kevin's house. Lying in his parents' crimson red bed, Kevin sleeps peacefully in his red pajamas under the comforter. He blinks hard and sits up. He rubs his eyes, opens them, and sees the falling snow. With a smile of disbelief, he grabs his green bathrobe and leaps out of bed.
Mom!
Beaming, Kevin rushes downstairs.
Mom!
He peeks into the dining room, then turns toward the living room. His gaze roams through the empty living room, over Santa's untouched food, and into the drawing room. He turns away. Kevin opens the front door and looks around at the deep snow which blankets the yard, front walk, driveway, and street. He lowers his head sadly and returns inside. The rented polka truck plows down the street and stops out front. Inside, Kevin stares at the family photo. He glances up. Kate enters the house.
Kevin! Kevin!
Kate glances into the dining room, her brow knit worriedly. Kevin's gaze brightens. He hops off the bed. Clutching at her heart, Kate wanders into the living room and sees Kevin's miniature tree and the carefully hung stockings. A touched smile spreads across her face. Kevin dashes excitedly downstairs and stops at the dining room. Behind him, Kate gapes and clasps her hands together. Kevin's eyes widen. He turns around slowly and stares at her. She smiles apologetically.
Merry Christmas, sweetheart.
Kevin's lower lip thrusts out in a pout. He blinks dejectedly. Kate's smile fades as her brow wrinkles with concern. She steps toward him.
Oh, Kevin, I'm so sorry.
Kevin's somber pout transforms into a wide, sunny smile. He runs into her arms. Kate squeezes him in a tight hug. Kevin hugs her back, closing his eyes. Kate kisses his ear. They finally pull apart.
Where's everybody else?
Oh, baby, they couldn't come. They wanted to so much.
No, I didn't fall asleep in the back.
The family floods in through the front door. Kevin's jaw drops. Peter picks Kevin up in a hug.
Ah, you're all right.
I love you. You okay?
Hey, Kev. It's pretty cool that you didn't burn the place down.
Buzz lifts his hand with an approving smile.
Thanks, Buzz.
They grip hands.
Wait a minute. How did you guys get home?
Oh, we took the morning flight, remember? The one you didn't want to wait for?
Oh, no. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Well, someone has to find an open store. We don't even have milk here.
I went shopping yesterday.
His family stares at him, stunned.
You shopping?
I got the milk, eggs, and fabric softener.
No kidding. What a funny guy. What else did you do while we were away?
Just hung around.
You went shopping?
Yes,
he doesn't know how to tie his shoe.
Peter absently taps Kevin and wanders off with the rest of the family, leaving Kevin alone in the hallway. Squinting, Kevin paces slowly through the living room and heads for a large drawing room window. In another room, Peter bends down to the floor and picks up Harry's gold tooth. He frowns and holds it up.
Honey, what's this?
Peter studies the tooth and unconsciously crooks his mouth as if feeling a tooth. Kevin approaches the window as snow showers down outside. Through the veil of falling snow, he sees Marley in the driveway next door, hugging first his adult son, then his daughter-in-law. Marley lifts his granddaughter up and hugs her tight. At the window, Kevin smiles happily. As Marley hugs his granddaughter, he spots Kevin and waves. Grinning, Kevin waves back. Marley sets his granddaughter down, takes her hand, and leads her toward his house. His son and daughter-in-law follow. Kevin's wide smile lingers.
Kevin! What did you do to my room?
Kevin's eyes pop open wide. He turns and bolts away from the window. Fade to black. This program has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Nancy Baker. Descriptions read by Margot Stage. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. For a complete listing of DVS programs and services, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203. Credits roll. A John Hughes production. A Chris Columbus film. Music by John Williams. Film editor Raja Gosnell. Production designer John Mudo. Director of photography Julio Macott. Executive producers Mark Levinson and Scott Rosenfeld and Tarkin Gotch. Written and produced by John Hughes. directed by Chris Columbus. Casting by Janet Hershenson, CSA, and Jane Jenkins, CSA. Associate producer, Mark Radcliffe. Costume designer, Jay Hurley. Color by Deluxe. Copyright 1990, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation. All rights reserved. Cast: Macaulay Culkin as Kevin, Joe Pesci as Harry, Daniel Stern as Marv, John Hurd as Peter, Roberts Blossom as Marley, Catherine O'Hara as Kate, Angela Gothels as Linny, Devin Rattray as Buzz, Jerry Bamman as Uncle Frank, Hilary Wolf as Megan, John Candy as Gus Polinski, Larry Hankin as Officer Balzac, Michael C. Morona as Jeff, Kristen Minter as Heather, Diana Campanu as Sandra, Jedediah Cohen as Rod, Kieran Culkin as Fuller, Senta Moses as Tracy, Anna Slotkey as Brooke, Terry Snell as Aunt Leslie, Jeffrey Wiseman as Mitch Murphy, Virginia Smith as Georgette, Matt Doherty as Stefan, Ralph Foodie as Gangster Number 1, Johnny, Michael Guido as Gangster Number 2, Snakes, Ray Toller as Uncle Rob, Billy Bird as Woman in Airport, Bill Aaron as Man in Airport, Jerry Becker as Officer Number 1, Victor Cole as Officer Number 2, Portia Radcliffe and Brittany Radcliffe as the cousins, Clark Devereaux as Officer Devereaux, Dan Charles Lukowski as Pizza Boy, Lynn Mansbach as French Woman, Peter Saragusa as Lineman, Alan Wilder as Scranton Ticket Agent, Hope Davis as French Ticket Agent, Diane B. Shaw as Airline Counterperson, Tracy Connor as Checkout Girl, Jim Ryan as Stock Boy, Kenneth Hudson Campbell as Santa, Sandra McCott as Santa's Elf, Mark Beltzman as Stosh, Ann Whitney as Drugstore Clerk, Richard J. Furfer as Store Manager, Jim Ortlieb as Herb the Drugstore Clerk, Kate Johnson as Police Operator, Michael Hansen and Peter Pantaleo as Airport Drivers, Jean-Claude Sciori as French Gate Agent, Monica Devereaux as Flight Attendant, Edward Bruzin, Frank R. Cernigal, John Hardy, Eddie Carosa, Robert Okrezik, Leo Parion, and Vince Wadzulis as the Polka Band. Stunts by Troy James Brown, Tim Davison, Leon Delaney, Rick Lefever, Larry Nicholas, Manuel Perry, and William Purcell. Soundtrack album available on CBS Records, cassettes, and tapes.